Switch for a second. My battery's going. Just hold a second. Okay, you there? All right. So, Reb Zalman, I think you're going to talk about him later, but is he someone who wrote books or something? It sounds, maybe I only know his name from the Bancroft Oral History.
No, he's written quite a lot of books. But I met him, it's a little later. I met him through the psychedelic world.
Okay, well, we'll get to that. So, back to, Roshi Baker. What's happening with, we're talking about contact, and then Alan Watts. So, yeah, Alan Watts and comparing Roshi.
Alan Watts, you know, I knew because of the Onslow Fords and KPFA.
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't surprise you that he died early, Alan Watts.
I never thought of it as late or early, but it doesn't surprise me that he died, if that's what you mean. No.
Yeah, I think he had a heart attack, and it might have been in the pool at the Playboy Mansion, though I don't know why I have that image. I don't know if that's accurate. Does that sound like something to you that you heard?
No, I certainly never heard that.
Okay. So, you're presenting contact. You've explained the multi-meanings of contact. You know, contact is also in electrical plugs, right?
Sure. That's one of the images. Certainly.
Right. So, I think of Ted Carpenter's book, They Became What They Beheld, and the first picture and the first title is Only Connect. Only Connect is, and I think of that when I think of contact, to connect. But what is the subtitle? It's Contact, the Only Love?
It's the whole title. Contact is the Only Love is the name of the piece. And another artist made a beautiful piece for me, which I have somewhere, which is called Love is the Only Contact, as a response, but I don't agree.
Right. You can't remember the name of the artist. That is somebody responding to that at the time? Or
yes, at the time. Yes.
Right. You don't remember the artist's name?
I have it somewhere.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Love is the only contact. That's not what you mean.
No, I mean contact is the only love. And, you know, it's the act of contact. And there's an act in contact.
Yeah. I think Krishnamurti would agree with you. You ever heard his talks?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you agree?
I've been, you know, he had that place in...
Ojai,
yeah. I've been there a number of times because my friends Liam O'Gallagher and Bob Ream lived there.
Do you remember an early encounter of Krishnamurti? This would be
I never encountered him personally.
So you've only read him or heard tape.
Right.
Uh-huh. Do you think he's trying to...
I've been to the place where he was.
Do you think him... From what you remember, what he said, he's explaining contact is the only love, would you say?
I don't know. That never occurred to me.
Okay. So this show that you're finally going to get at the San Francisco, and is it called the Museum of Modern Art at that point, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art?
I guess it's called the San Francisco Museum of Art.
Oh, okay. The show is Who Are You?
Now they call it SFMOMA. But it's in a different location.
Right.
But it's the same museum, yeah.
Okay. Now, have you heard of Andy Warhol by the time you're out there? He hasn't done the Camillo boxes, I don't think, yet. I mean, the Camillo. What am I thinking of? The Campbell Soup boxes. Brillo, I'm thinking of. A combination of Brillo and Campbell Soup, Camillo. He hasn't done the Campbell Soup can boxes, I don't think. Can you remember when you first heard that?
I heard of Andy... I don't know. I think about the same time that I had my first show, but it may have been... I knew about him when I was in San Francisco that time, so... I think I knew about him.
Yeah, he was in the galleries in 62 with Rauschenberg and the pop art.
Yeah, because I knew Leo Castelli.
Ah, you knew him, the sponsor of Andy Warhol, the gallery.
Well, the gallerist, yeah, the owner of the gallery.
He gave...
And Rauschenberg's gallery.
Right, and do you know, recognize the name Ivan Karp?
Sure, I knew Ivan well. I saw him a couple of years ago at his O.K. Harris gallery.
Right, because I just saw a documentary, early documentary in 87, right after Warhol died.
Ivan worked for Leo.
Right, okay, so because I expected they were showing the first gallery showings of Warhol being interviewed, you know, acting, quote, dumb, and he's referring all answers to Ivan Karp, and so I was wondering why Castelli wasn't there. But Karp is part of Castelli's gallery at that time?
Yes, he was an employee.
Right, so probably Castelli, when did he die? Leo, if he's dead. Because they're interviewing him more than... interviewing Ivan Karp more than Leo Castelli. And Castelli...
Leo was a much a modest gentleman. Ivan was a rip-roaring, you know, publicizing guy. I mean, he got old, so he was pretty well gone in the last years. Big cigar smoker. In fact, O.K. Harris had his... as well as a gallery, a little cigar pavilion.
Oh, okay, you're saying Ivan. No, who's the cigar?
Yeah, Ivan Karp, after he left Leo, opened a gallery called O.K. Harris.
Okay.
Which is on West Broadway.
And he was a cigar.
I think he's still alive. He's very old.
Yeah, you're saying. Who's the cigar smoker?
He was.
Ivan,
he
okay.
is.
All right.
He's still alive. He still is.
Because Castelli dies in 99.
Uh-huh. And his wife was also
Ileana Sonnabend.
Exactly. She had her own gallery.
Right. And I don't know if she's alive. Okay. So Ivan Karp, there was a question about, did you meet Willoughby Sharp? You recognize
sure.
that?
Did absolutely. I still know him. I mean, I don't see him very often, but yeah, Willoughby was around in those days.
Yeah, he would have met you in the ESCO, because I don't think he... In 64, he puts an exhibit on at Columbia University about, you know, celebrating or promoting pop art, but you're in San Francisco by that time. Or no, maybe...
Willoughby was around all the time. He's a friend of John Brockman's, too.
Right. But you remember Willoughby in the early 60s on the scene then?
Yeah, kind of. I don't remember exactly when, but sure.
Okay, so Ivan Karp and, okay, so Warhol you're aware of. So you, oh, I wanted to mention, do you remember the Cuban Missile Crisis in October 62?
I remember it, but I don't connect it to anything.
Right, you know, that would be the time... getting close to the time of the newspaper strike and when you're with Judy. But now you don't connect anything. All right, so here we are. You're going to have this show. You've raised some money, right?
Yep.
And any stories about that? Who helped you?
Well, the guy who wound up giving most of it was a guy named Hal Babbitt. And Hal Babbitt was Kaiser's guy who he was a close associate of Kaiser's, and he did his giving, you know, I don't know that there was a foundation at the time, but I'm not sure there was, but he was his charity arm as well as other things, and he became a good friend of Judy and mine, and he gave us quite a lot of the money for contact.
Okay,
and a few other people, you know, in San Francisco area gave donations.
How did you meet this Kaiser-connected guy?
That's very interesting that you ask, but I can't tell you. I went around and met everybody that I could think of that had money, the Zellerbacks, the Swigs, you know, I knew some of those people from when I was married to Anne.
Yeah, so that helped, yeah.
Not really, but there were people in the art world that, you know, so we got the money together.
Right, but you were able to find these people because you knew that level of society.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And Herb was still around.
Right, Herb Kane.
Yeah.
Ivan Karp was born in 1926, but he's still alive, apparently.
Yeah, he's not really compos mentis.
Okay. Now, here it is. Your show was on a few days after the Kennedy assassination. Now, you say the Kennedy assassination is an event. You do remember where you were when it happened. Where were you? Preparing for your show?
No, I was in a woman's bedroom on Russian Hill.
And it was intimate reasons you were in her bedroom?
I believe so.
But it wasn't Judy.
No.
But Judy is with you. Has to be.
Yes. Judy's probably working at David's Deli.
Right, but you guys aren't committed to each other.
She's my nurse. I introduce her to everybody in San Francisco as my nurse.
And
by this time, I believe we're living on Hayes Street. I can't remember when we moved from the barge to Hayes Street, but somewhere around there.
Why'd you leave the barge?
I can't remember. Maybe Stuart needed it, or I can't remember.
Yeah, Stuart Brand. But the thing is that you're able to have other relationship while she's your nurse. She agrees to that.
Hey, man, it was the 60s. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, well, at least I don't remember the 60s. That shows you how much I'm involved in that.
Yeah, it was, you know.
Do you remember that line? If you remember the 60s, you didn't live it? That's what I'm referring to.
I've heard it a lump of times. I don't think it's true.
Yeah, you remember the 60s. Because you lived it. Okay, so so you hear the Kennedy assassination. What do you think of that? Are you upset? Does it mean anything to you personally?
Yeah, I'm shocked. Like everybody else.
Yeah. So...
And if you want to know who I was with, I don't know.
Right. But the point is that you turn the TV on and hear it, I guess.
Yeah. No, there was a big noise outside, and then we turned on the radio, I believe.
Mm. Okay, so how does that affect your thinking about the show, or it doesn't affect it at all? How do you adjust?
No, it doesn't affect my thinking about the show.
Do you think it's a conspiracy more than Lee Harvey Oswald? Do you think along those lines? Are you cynical,
no,
suspicious?
Not right away, no.
Okay, so you do the show, and... A lot of chaos. Excuse me, we already described this a bit. You need some assistance, and you find this young guy, Mike Callahan. What's his name, Kevin?
Michael Callahan.
Callahan. And through Morton Subotnick. Did you know Morton from KPFA days?
No, I knew Morton only because Michael McClure told me to go see him and Ramon, who were with Pauline Oliveros running the San Francisco Tape Music Center.
Oh, you knew
Michael's.
And you met Pauline Oliveros at that point.
Yes.
Yeah, because she had a big influence on Frank Zappa, which is interesting. No, I have it in the interview. I was just reviewing my interview for a Zappa conference in Paris, which I participated on Saturday night by Skype.
Okay.
And I was reviewing what he said about her. Do you remember a piece? Do you know much about her art?
Yes.
Do you remember a piece Zappa describes it as sound inaudible above and below human hearing, and they come together and they form a mass that we can hear? Does that sound familiar?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I do know her work, and I still know her now.
Okay, so Michael McClure, it sends you to that center. Which is run by Morton Subotnick and Pauline?
And Ramon Sender.
Oh, okay. And that's where Michael Callahan is.
Yes, he's in his mid-teens.
That's amazing. There's a connection that I never heard of before. Michael and Pauline and Zappa and Gerd. That's Indirectly.
Well, I don't think Michael was connected to...
No, he wasn't connected to... I'm just talking about Zappa and Pauline, but...
Yeah, I didn't know about Zappa and Pauline until you told me.
Right. But the interesting thing is Michael, who's going to be a big factor in your life, works for Pauline, who has an effect on Zappa. You know, two degrees of separation there.
And Pauline, we like her work, but we don't like her vibes.
At that time.
She wants the place cleaned up. In fact, she writes a, like, I think, 2 or 3 page memo, which I have somewhere, about how to keep the center clean, and Michael is supposed to do it. And so we read it in a comic, satiric fashion into tape.
That's at this time, when you meet him.
Yes.
Yeah. So what is she... She doesn't like the mess he makes in making technologies or hooking up gadgets?
All together, you know, it's a performance space and plus a studio, and, you know, it needs to be swept and it needs to be dusted, and Michael's not into sweeping or dusting. He's a mess. He still is a mess, and he was a mess when he was at home, but his mess is his mess, and he understands it, and he... And everything, you know, is at his hands. He's fantastic. He's, as far as I can count, he's gone through 5 states of the art since then. You know, that was tube technology, vacuum tubes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was already... Go ahead.
Now he writes computer programs. You know, it's amazing. And he's all self-taught.
So he's this teenager that... Morton says maybe he'll help you.
Yeah.
And does he know, what does he know at that point to help you? Is he
knows audio, and he knows technology, and he knows what the equipment is available. And, you know, we get to know each other, and we have a good time. And
you smoke grass together? Did you turn him on?
Yeah, but he's never been a big smoker.
The thing is, this is an epiphany in your life, meeting him. I mean, this may be one of the most important people.
Yeah, I mean, think of it, that was 1963.
No, it's November 63. It's right before the show, right?
Well, no, it was several months before the show, because it took us a long time to get it together.
Okay, so maybe the summer of 63 you meet him.
So, but I mean...
he goes from vacuum tubes to the internet.
I mean, think of it. You know, okay, 63, 08, we're still working together.
Yeah, 45 years. And this is the summer of 2008.
Yeah, and we've practically never had miscommunication. You know, I mean, the only real miscommunication we had, and that worked out very well, was his alcoholism.
Right. How do you spell, I want to just see, has he got a Wikipedia entry?
I don't know.
How do you spell Callahan?
Like you spell Callahan. C-A-L-L-A-H-A-N.
And the, I'm going to see if they got his date. Do you know where?
Yeah, the new book that just came out by Tom Welsh about the San Francisco Tape Music Center.
Oh, okay. So there's a section on him.
Yeah, and Pauline must be very heavy in that book.
Well,
Yeah,
we're almost up to this. We're 20 minutes short of the 3-hour slot we usually do, but we can end sooner. Okay, so he was born in 45, say.
Mm-hmm.
1945, so he's almost 20 years younger than you.
Yeah.
So he figures out how to set up this environment. So we'll end. Well, let's describe the evening, the next couple of days, how this puts your name on the art world map for a while, right? This event, which is...
I don't know. I mean, it was a... You know, to some people, it was a disaster.
Right, but the bad review it got...
Yeah.
the critic who wrote it, you meet years later and thank him for the bad review because it became notorious overnight and it was all lined up for the next couple of nights or something, right?
Well, I mean, we had two performances, two nights.
So let's describe what happened the first night. Why is it a significant event?
Well, I mean, Michael, you know, knew what he was doing, but he had never done anything of that scope. And we had these plastic gazebos with the sociologist panel and, you know, four people in each of four gazebos, including the mayor and Herb Cain and Allen Ginsberg and so forth and so on.
The mayor sat in it? You're saying the mayor sat in it?
Yes.
This was planned before the night?
Yeah, I through Liam and Bob, I was introduced to Judith McBean, who's still a close friend of mine and a patron, and she helped organize this event. She had just been a debutante. She was out of the social world, and she wanted to do something in the arts, and she helped us organize it, and she did an incredible job. I mean, these people, we had 16 people, two nights. They're each of two, you know, celebrities. And plus we had this panel of sociologists, and we had closed-circuit television, which was pretty rare at that time, and a telephone system, and three slide projectors, and channels of audio. Now, the problem with the audio is Michael hadn't anticipated, you know, we borrowed all this equipment, some from the Tape Center and from other people that he knew, and the telephone company lent us stuff, and I don't remember who lent us the television stuff, but we got feedback.
Audio distortion.
Oh, man, it was like... You know, and it got very chaotic, it kind of swung, but then at one point things got out of hand, and Michael McClure and I got up on the stage and roared beast poetry at each other to kind of calm things down, and some guy got up, there was a piano on stage, which we weren't using, and played the piano, which didn't make us happy, but we had trouble getting away from it. And but just loud chords, you know, discordant stuff.
And the feedback's going.
What?
And the feedback is interrupting, too.
Yes, we have some recordings of it. And, so it was pretty fabulous. And the second night, I took LSD. So, that was even weirder.
Did you have feedback the second night?
Yes. Well, there was no way with this system that Michael had put together that, you know, that we had all these microphones in the booth and in the panel and the speakers, and, you know, it was
And you didn't rehearse it beforehand and have check it out? You couldn't?
I mean, I couldn't, because we didn't have the people, you know.
So the
the more meat, the more problem.
So the feedback is the message. That's the chaos that comes in under McLuhan's electronic effect.
Absolutely. And then, you know, then I didn't know that Alvin Balkind, who from Vancouver, was in the audience.
Right. Before you get into that, I just want to get the names. Is Judy McBean? What was the name?
Judith. Judith McBean. McBean.
And who was Liam and Bob? I didn't get that.
Liam O'Gallagher and Bob Rehm, R-H-E-E-M. They're two artists, poets, who lived in San Francisco at the time. Liam just died last year in his 90s. He was Irish, wonderful guy, friend of Huxley's and all kinds of other people.
And he helped raise the money, you're saying?
He introduced me to Judith. He was a friend from when I was married to Anne, actually.
Okay.
I know him. the two of them. Bob is still alive. They live in Santa Barbara.
Okay, now this is presenting the TV, isn't that? This is before Nam June Paik does his TV performances, right? Nam June Paik.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You're. Is there anybody else who's moved? Nobody has created this kind of electronic feedback chaos installation. That's a first, right?
I believe so. You know, it wasn't the intention.
No, but the sum is greater than the parts. You know.
Yeah, you know, it really worked for a lot of people.
So
and
the
people were very interesting bunch of people in these gazebos.
In terms of the celebrities, their names.
Yeah, and they were prompted by the sociologists about topics that they were talking about. So there was a lot of interesting conversation going on, and we were trying to broadcast that to the audience and mixing it.
So the focus was a panel.
No, the panel was just these four guys: Howie Becker, Irving Goffman. Irving's been dead for a long time. Howie's still alive, and they're famous sociologists.
Yeah, Irving Goffman is famous. He built a school of thought.
Howie Becker, but. Each one was connected to one of these gazebos by telephone.
Right. And
they were supposed to spark the conversation by giving them topics or by asking questions.
To the celebrities in the gazebos, yeah.
Yeah.
They did not talk to each other as a panel?
No, they could talk to each other, but, you know, like I said, you know, the intention was to broadcast and mix these four conversations in these four gazebos. But, you know, we got a lot of feedback. But we got some conversation.
And you have this on tape?
Yes.
So did you script the sociologists for what they would say? Or they?
No. The theme of it is, who are you and what's happening?
Now, here, to me, this is interesting because my book, Fat at Communion with Bob Dobbs, is mimes the panel action as an archetype. It's important that you have a panel, because the panel becomes the group mind. I mean, so much of corporate life is going to conferences with panels. That starts happening, in, I guess, in the 60s, maybe they were in the 50s, but really it's all professional expense discounts, right? People go and do Hawaii or someplace and they have panels, but they're basically there to vacation and fill up the hotels, right? So the panel is an important form that comes in under electronic conditions, in the McLuhan sense. So so that's pretty interesting that you feature a panel as the group line.
The reason I wanted it was because I realized that otherwise those conversations could just be, you know, people could not have anything to talk about. And I wanted the subject, the theme, to be guided. The theme was, who are you and what's happening? So it's an interesting, at the time, it seemed to me a very interesting theme. And of course, the people like Alan understood it immediately.
Alan Watts or Ginsberg?
No, Ginsberg. I don't think Watts was in it.
And Ginsberg was in one of the celebrity chairs, right?
Well, he was in a booth with three other people.
But that's not one of the gazebos.
Yes, one of the gazebos. They were just plastic. They plastic draped over a framework with a little table and four seats.
Ah.
And microphone.
So there would be two or three in each of the four gazebos.
Four.
Oh, they were only in one place.
No, there were four gazebos, each with four people. So there were 16, like, celebrities or quasi-celebrities in each night. So there were 32 altogether, and there were, you know, but the sociologists were the same in the two nights.
Right, but see, this is a very accurate description, presentation, miming of the global theater as presented by McLuhan, because for people go to conferences to find out what's happening.
In the program, there was a paragraph of McLuhan's.
Maybe it referred to conferences and panels?
No.
But here's what McLuhan would later see as the pattern. To find out what's happening in any profession or discipline or scene, you go and the celebrities and experts present what they think is happening. It was always a way of finding out what's going on in your field. You go to a conference.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I mean, the word happening was
prominent at that point. It was happenings. What's
Alan,
happening?
Alan Caprow.
Yeah. And of course, you knew those guys, right? You knew that scene in New York. But the thing is that you were actually the most accurate predictive happening, because you're taking what's going to become a sociological phenomenon, the panel, which professions and scenes go to more and more as culture becomes the business in American society. They go to see what's happening in their field by listening to a panel. But it's always overridden by the ongoing electronic chaos, which cancels the meaning of the panel pretty quickly. So what you hear at a panel or in your field is obsolete within a few weeks, because the feedback is what no one can keep up with. But to find out what...
Nobody can keep up with the feedback because it accelerates.
That's right. And our society, and that's a metaphor for society. I mean, I don't know what people have written about this presentation. Has there been any papers done on it, on this particular event?
Not really, no.
Maybe
it's pre-ESCO.
Right, ESCO is more well-known. But this event, really, the way you set it up, is exactly the information society.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but...
Yeah, this is the first paper on it. We're doing it. It's taking a long, many hours to get to it. But no, it's actually predicting what I meant in my book. The panel as the common... I don't want to say bourgeois middle class. It's in all fields, unions. They all have their panels, bring in the experts about whatever the concern is of that week or that day or that strike or that movement or problem, right? And this is crossfire.
Yeah, well,
it's crossfire, or it's...
It was crossfire, yes, it certainly was.
Yeah, and you...
And like you say, the metaphor of a positive feedback loop is to me, one of the most valuable metaphors that I learned, and I learned about it from Mr. Michael Callahan. He taught me it, because I didn't know what it was going on. You know, I'd heard it before, but I didn't understand the electronics of it, or that you had to interrupt it. It was the only way that you could get rid of it, because if it accelerates, it accelerates until it breaks down.
And that is what he knew before it happened, or he figured out when it was happening?
No, he knew what the phenomenon was, but once you're into it, stopping it is not very easy.
And he figured out how to do it?
Well, he didn't really stop it, because where you would stop it at one place and it would show up in another, the system was too complex.
Yeah.
And we couldn't take the system apart, because then everything would have been dead.
So he explained to you why it was chaos.
Yes.
He never solved it.
No, not really.
But he would temporarily surf it and stop it for a while. That's incredible. And for those listening, they can read an interview with Michael Callahan, and he talks about McLuhan in the present issue of Art Form, right? On the stands right now. I don't know. Is it a monthly? I think it's a monthly. It's a May issue.
It's a May issue.
Yeah, and they're reviewing 1968, but they also do a section on ESCO, and they talk to Michael, and brings in McLuhan. So, because this really is what McLuhan was pointing out, you actually created the effect. I don't think you fully understood this at the time.
No, but I didn't. But I mean, I was the inspiration was obvious.
Yeah, you subconsciously expressed.
I knew I was inspired by the book. I just didn't know why I was
doing
exploring exactly the relationship between the panel and the gazebos, and of course I wasn't anticipating feedback.
That's right.
I was anticipating, I mean, part of it is like having been at KPFA. This was like, in a sense, an expanded radio experience.
Yes. Yeah. And
but remember, there were also slides happening and closed circuit video cameras and you know, television sets.
Those are the media. The human thing, though, the human input is a panel and the celebrities. I mean, that's what.
Yeah, and you see the celebrities or the people in the gazebos were visible because it was transparent plastic.
Yeah, you could see them, but they're like in the, what do they call it, the media bubble.
They're on stage, actually.
Yeah, the Global Theater. And a lot of the crossfire is the latest. I mean, I could plug in CNN News right now, and there'd be some scandal did something, or some celebrity did something they all be arguing about, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's the day in, day out, 24/7 now. But you have the archetypal form. Now, what's interesting is that you look at Finnegan's Wake and the Ten Thunders. Finnegan's Wake is like a book of feedback.
That's true.
You know, and he got that by listening to shortwave radio in the 20s in
Paris. Oh, really? That I don't know.
Yeah, he used to go up and down the dial and
No kidding.
Yeah, and listen to Dublin and Germany.
Wow.
And that is where he realized, damn, I can't be in exile anymore. I'm back in Dublin. I can hear my countrymen, which was ambivalent.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And so he's going up and down the dial, listening to all these languages. And he's getting feedback.
Wait till I tell that to Callahan. He won't believe it.
Yeah. And remember, McLuhan is translating Finnegan's Wake. So here's what Joyce is doing. He's going up and down the dial, getting all this static and advertisements and noise, and he decides to paint it into the book structure. So he just paints that experience into the book page.
Somebody wrote about that?
Yes, there is one James Joyce quarterly article by a priest who goes into the shortwave environment that Joyce was experiencing.
Well, if you think of the citation, email it.
Yeah, I can look it up. The thing is that this is what Joyce is doing. He's saying, okay, so then over the next 17 years, he fine-tunes this perceptual experience. And he says, well, future technologies are going to come with more sensory stuff rather than just the ear and the radio. So he imagines television, and television's invented, and he talks about that. But overall, Finnegan's Wake does not have any content. It's the resonating acoustic feedback. And remember, it has the four, and what's going through the feedback is the commentary by the four evangelists. There's your four panelists. You actually helped Marshall translate Finnegan's Wake.
Well,
you manifested what he was imagining.
What was his translation?
All his writing, Understanding Media and the Project, is an attempt to explain and translate Finnegan's Wake. He knew it was more than a book, so you didn't analyze what each line, which had two or three puns in it.
What did he think of the skeleton key?
He thought it was crap, and I have a copy. I have Marshall's copy.
Really?
Yeah, with his notes on it.
I met the guy. What was his name?
Joseph Campbell.
Oh, he wrote it?
Yeah, Joseph Campbell and Henry Robinson published The Skeleton Key to Finney's Wake in 1944.
Wasn't there an Irishman who wrote...
Are you thinking of The Annotations by Roland McHugh? No. I mean, maybe Henry Robinson's Irish. It's Robinson and Campbell.
No. I knew who Joseph Campbell was. I read a lot.
Maybe you're thinking of Anthony Burgess and his short version of Finnegan's Wake, but he's British. I don't know what you're thinking.
No, I was thinking. I can't remember the guy's name. I meant one.
No, McLuhan said that Campbell didn't understand Finnegan's Wake because what people.
I'm sure. I believe that because Campbell was into some other mythology altogether.
Yeah. Okay, just to finish this point, it's important, is that if you're going to translate Finnegan's Wake, McLuhan said you don't become a scholar of 50 or 60 languages and try to figure out what each semantic phoneme means. He knew that Joyce was writing about the interaction. It says here in Wikipedia, you and Michael coined the term intermedia. McLuhan uses that term in his 1970 book, From Cliché to Archetype. But he's saying that Joyce is describing the intermedia effects and interactions, causes and effects. And you can read McLuhan's son, Eric McLuhan's PhD, on going to the details of Finnegan's Wake and the Ten Thunders. But McLuhan says, if you want to translate Finnegan's Wake, you say speech is an extension of... Well, first of all, you say language, spoken language is a storing and expediting of information. Then it's changed by writing. then that's changed by the printing press. And then you run through the history of forms of distortion of language. That is, which is Understanding Media, the book, goes through the history of all the extensions of communication. That is a translation of the meaning and the purpose and the effect of Finnegan's Wake. That's how you translate it.
Wow.
And when he wrote Gutenberg Galaxy, you know, a year or two before Understanding Media came out, it comes out in 62, Gutenberg Galaxy, all through the 50s when he was working on it, the subtitle was The Road to Finnegan's Wake.
Okay.
And that's known by Donald Thiel. He's the only one who saw those early manuscripts and knew that McLuhan was with Gutenberg Galaxy, which came out before Understanding Media. He's translating and explaining Finnegan's Wake. Now, I'm saying that you guys presented it theatrically because Joyce knew that the feedback, because there was not enough feed forward, which is the term McLuhan uses in War, Peace, and Global Village, there wasn't enough feed forward to understand and anticipate and control the feedback chaos. So the feedback chaos is the grand butterfly effect of the electronic world, and we never figured it out.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of news to me. Very interesting shit.
Yeah, no, that really, to me, I didn't know the details of this performance, the panel. That's what triggered me in getting what you were miming there, and that's just one part of it. So here it is, 3 hours. This is a good point to end on, right? But the epiphany about your own work 45 years later. So you get in touch with Michael and tell him that. And
I will.
Now you're going away soon, right?
Yes.
For a couple of weeks. So we will.
I'm going from the 13th to the 21st.
Okay, so today's the 6th, so the 13th, 20th. So we can't talk till the 28th. About this will give you a break, and we've come to a key point here after 9 hours. Okay?
Okay.
All right, so thanks a lot, Garrett, and thanks to Scott.
Scott.
Yeah.
Scott, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, that was terrific. It's been a lot of fun tonight.
Well,
yeah.
Well, we'll figure it out.
Go ahead and